Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Redmen Originals podcast. I'm Paul Machin. Alongside me are Chris Pajak, Dan Club, and John Machin as well, subbing in for Chloe Bloxham, who will return for the Bias Football podcast later on. Lucky here. Yes, Chloe did the final word this morning, so if you want a more point-by-point breakdown of how Liverpool continue to totally and utterly cock up a title challenge, then you can head over to redmenplus.com and watch the final
Really words. Selling that one, Paul.
Yeah, but you know, people like misery, I've found, Chris. People seem to be very wedded to their misery.
People don't pay for, actually you do pay for misery.
People pay a lot of money for misery. They do. They really do. Anyway, yeah, we're going to dive into it. We're going to be talking about, obviously, West Ham 2, Liverpool 2. We're going to talk about Mohamed Salah, his future. We're going to be talking about Arne Slot as well, more of that in part two. But before we do, the show is sponsored by Magical Vegas. If you want to know more about that and you're here with us on YouTube, here's Steve Hall with all the details. YouTube viewers, welcome back. Podcast listeners, you've never been anywhere. Let's crack on. Sadly, and talk about West Ham 2, Liverpool 2, and just as a little aside from this is I missed the game at the weekend, so this morning had to sit down and watch the full 90, knowing the outcome, but actually not knowing much about the controversy and all that surrounded it. So I actually ended up, I've never once watched a game of football where I've known the outcome ahead of time and not felt, particularly if it was a bad result, not felt actually not... I felt better about it than I would have done if I'd watched it live. I was so angry when I finished watching this game this morning. So angry. We're going to come on to it. But we're going to start with, yeah, look, here we are. Title challenge, as if it's probably been over for 2 weeks, but, you know, we all live in hope. Now we don't. We live in reality, Chris. This is where we're at. You know, I've referenced it a few times. I think we're 2 weeks ago on here. You said Liverpool, we can see now Liverpool are the third best team in the league. And that, look, part of me was going, oh, come on, look, if it's football to be played, if they can just win some games, there's plenty of opportunities left to prove you wrong. They've proved you right. The league table is now doing that thing where everyone filters their way out. Liverpool are very clearly right now the third best team in this league.
Yeah, they are, and it's unfortunate, isn't it? Because this Liverpool side punched above the weight probably for so long. And I actually heard Rob Gutman talking on the Anfield Wrap. I think it was in the middle of last... It was straight after the game, and he said sort of along the lines of... And I thought it was a really, really interesting point. If Liverpool had ended up in third but had a slow start to the season and fought their way through, you'd feel much better about the season on the whole. But it is because Liverpool have been so good and managed to get through those injuries and everything else, just peter out like this. It hurts more than if we'd just arrived in third and had a late surge or something, doesn't it? And I can't unpick the I think there have been mistakes made this season, and you know, it's tough to say as a Liverpool fan, but we've got things wrong on occasion, haven't we? And, you know, I think, you know, the last couple of weeks, we've seen a few changes, and obviously Salah doesn't start and all that type of stuff this time around. I think it was a big decision, and it was probably the right decision, but I don't think we've managed the squad particularly well over the last sort of 3 to 4 weeks, if I'm being honest. And I think that is one of the reasons that we've slowly sort of petered out.
Yeah, it's, Chris's point there, Dan, it's an interesting one, or Chris's quote of Rob Gutman's point, that it's like scoring the last goal in a draw. When you score the last goal in a draw, you feel loads better than, you know, that you get a point, you know, minimum objective of not getting beaten has been achieved. But yeah, there's a psychological thing to it, and Chris is dead right there. If Liverpool had turned things around and got themselves up, like the COVID season, You know, we finished third that season, yeah. And we end the season 10,000 fans back at Anfield. Real sense that we're going to turn things around in the following season. It doesn't feel like that now. This just feels like, particularly with the Klopp stuff looming large over the top of everything, everything just feels like it's all just, I don't know, petered out. Is the way to put it?
Yeah, it does. Going out with a little bit of a whimper, isn't it? In many senses, I talk about sort of the emotions of the Klopp stuff, and how I think that's heightened things and sort of made the losses all the more painful as well. But I make you right in terms of how it feels, because it definitely feels that way. Because as Chris rightly says, we've been largely punching above our weight and largely brilliant at times of season. The highs have been amazing, all the late winners and the resilience and the second half performances and all that sort of stuff, and powers of recovery along the way have made it all feel incredible. And as I say, the Klopp emotions of it made everything feel joyous, and this fairy tale and the dream of quadruple, or at the very bare minimum going out with Premier League. But you said it there, having the COVID, I think last season is an example of that as well, to be honest with you, because a large part of last season it was half crap and we thought, how have we suddenly become so bad?
We finished fifth and felt more optimistic about the season than we finished in third.
We just hit upon that Trent going into midfield inverted stuff. It was the Arsenal game, wasn't it, where things sort of span around for us in 10 game unbeaten run, was it?
It was 12 or 13.
Yeah, in total, span across, I think 10 games in the back end of the Premier League season. We all went, okay, this is cause for optimism heading into this campaign, and then obviously as it's turned out, it's gone the other way around this year, which is a shame. But like I say, I do think and people are sort of pointing the finger at the Klopp announcement as being sort of a reason as to why. But what I will say, I don't think it's sort of played into our dip in performance and the fact we are going out with a little bit of a whimper now. But I think what it has done from an emotional standpoint from the fan base is, as I said, it has made everything feel all that much more important. And when we've won games last minute, it's felt like the best thing in the world. And when we haven't been so good and we drop points on the way, it's made us all come crashing down. So that's all played into our feeling around it all now for me.
That's basically it, isn't it, Dad? Is that there was something, felt like something was building, and I think this is something building. You know, I think we can look in many positive ways around the squad that Liverpool have got, the players that they've got, but it's that thing of everyone wants to point fingers, everyone wants to know why it's not quite worked out, and there's tons of reasoning behind it, but there is ultimately a little point of a couple of instances in this game which I thought highlighted it really well, that is Jurgen Klopp and all of the players, when the chips are down, when things are really hurting and you really need to dig deep, we'll never truly know whether they all gave absolutely everything. Now, we'll assume they did, because I think that's the honourable sort of thing to do. You know, these are Liverpool players, we like them, we love the manager and all that kind of stuff, but it's impossible to know. What is there a percentage that we've lost out on because of this? Because I've players looked at, you know, there's a Euros in the summer for a number of these lads, when the objectives just start to slip away, do people just go, do they go that step?
A couple of weeks ago, it would have become fairly obvious to the players that they probably weren't going to win the league, but they'd achieved their goals for the season, because almost certainly the goals for the season were a trophy and top four.
Yeah,
and they'd done that.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, Euros coming up, we've achieved what we set out to do, we're not going to get any further, we're not going to win the league, so maybe, you know, this is the time to just enjoy playing football and not really. I mean, that's all speculation. Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, for me, it's a bit unfortunate but disappointing in that we waded our way through all those injuries with the kids coming on and playing out of their skin, and we thought, this is brilliant. When we get the main lads back, it'll be even better. And of course, bringing the main lads in, we got worse.
Yeah.
I wanted the kids back. Well, you know, where's Bobby Clark when you need him? You know, get Dan's on.
Yeah.
And that's the way I felt, that the guys coming back couldn't get up to speed quickly enough, and there's not enough games left in the season for us to really see what we're like when they're all fully fit again.
Yeah, and there's just something, again, it all feels like excuses at this point of the season, but I don't feel angry about most of this. I just feel a bit like, just feel sad, because I think, you know, there was something real there, you know, about giving Jurgen Klopp this sort of big send off. And, you know, ultimately, there's two other football teams chock full of really good footballers who want to go and do that as well. And every week we come up against another team, and, you know, it's football. You come up against a bunch of lads who've got their own objectives and their own reasons and their own, you know, reasons to dig deep and go up against us. But yeah, the thing I've kind of learned over Jurgen Klopp's tenure is we're not very good at the magic. We've had them up at Barcelona, was the ultimate magic Liverpool moment, but like, we Jürgen Klopp's Liverpool is best when it's the best. You know what I mean? When it's got assurance and it knows what it's doing and it's all sort of functioning. It's not. We've had loads of sort of lucky moments, I guess, throughout this season. But I guess what I'm kind of driving at is that it goes back to like 17-18 Champions League final of him coming away and going, you know, the best teams win games without being at the best. Mm. And I feel like Liverpool need to be at the peak of their powers to really be in control. This isn't the team that's like Brendan Rodgers' team. Maybe it's a bit too similar to Brendan Rodgers' team.
The fact is, though, that the games which were significant and we didn't win them, we should have won them.
Yeah.
We had the chances to win all of those games. You know, the United games, the Crystal Palace game. We had the chances to win those games and the players just didn't step up and do it.
Yeah.
And again, against West Ham, 2-1 up, you know, in the second half. And don't win the game.
And that's the best Liverpool side knows how to manage a game of football. This Liverpool side's never really learned how to manage a game of football. And, you know, you can cite going behind a bazillion times this season first as not being able to manage a game of football. And I just think it's slightly different. I think we've relied on those magic moments too much at times.
Yeah.
And I think when I look at Arsenal and when I look at Manchester City, it is the system that beats the opposition.
Yeah.
With Liverpool, it's individual brilliance or you know, that counter-attack, those quick direct attacks that Jürgen Klopp's been famous for, they get us. But when teams sit back, that is something, I'll be honest, that is, we've struggled against that for the 9.5 years.
Yeah, I agree, yeah.
You know, it never really got the better of the low block.
Yeah.
Not in the way that Man City do, not in the way that Arsenal have done this season. And I think, you know, it sounds terrible, but it is time for a change.
Yeah.
We are ready to take the next step and play in a slightly different way. A way that gives us more control over the pitch. I think if you've got more control, maybe you've got less injuries. You're not having people do, I don't know, pluck a figure out of thin air, 15 high-speed sprints a game. That all has an impact on muscles and all this type of stuff. And, you know, you can see the injuries throughout Klopp's tenure have always hampered us.
Yeah.
And, you know, do they at Arsenal, do they at Man City in exactly the same way? Or are they able, because the system's so good, to step up and get over those injuries more so than maybe Liverpool have been able to do?
I think what I mean, because it was kind of on the fly thing, is more that we can win games and we can have exciting moments, but we don't win stuff when we're a team like that. We need to have, it's the defensive thing. You know, we need to know to not chip goals to be the best Liverpool, and it's not something we've been so lax all season. That going a goal down thing is mad. Like, because, and that has real hallmarks of last year. And in a different way, not exactly the same thing, where you're watching something unfold and you and I can't figure out why this, you know, we've got Alisson in goal and we've got Virgil at the back and there's Robbo and there's Trent and there's a good centre-half alongside him and we've refreshed the midfield and that was meant to be the thing. Why are we still conceding goals? And
the system?
Yeah, exactly. Not quite.
Because we've replaced defenders throughout the last 9.5 years and we were always in the same boat, apart from, you know, the 18-month period where we were the best football side in the world by a country mile. And that was when the defence and everything was humming and we had control more and we had that game management and everything else.
Fabinho at his best helped a lot.
Fabinho at his best did, yeah, time. Of course.
It's probably like, 18 months is probably even underselling. It's a bit longer, but you're right.
Maybe.
And we had forwards who took their chances.
Yeah. And it's mad because I'd seen some of the fallout from the game and then I went back and watched it. And I said, Liverpool were, it's funny to say this when you've drawn and the context of what it meant. Liverpool were fine. It was actually fine performance from Liverpool, generally speaking, in so much as we had loads of the ball, we created loads of opportunities, we made their goalkeeper work on plenty of occasions. The players that we brought in to be fresher and do things actually had all seemed to have pretty good games in a general sense. But if you don't take your chances and you concede goals, then you are, and ultimately that's footy. And the problem is that we've now been doing this. We've probably played like this all season, but we've scored the goals that have got us through. The second we stop being able to take a surplus of goals,
hasn't been good enough to survive if your forwards don't score goals.
You never feel comfortable with a 1-0 lead with this team.
We've been a team that doesn't get beat though. It's only, you know, even now we've still not lost very many games in the Prem. Normally you would win the title with that few defeats.
We haven't kept many clean sheets along the way.
worry about
that. Well, we're averaging over a goal a game.
That's the problem, isn't it? We're just not defending very well.
The lack of personal pride in some of the defending recently has been quite alarming, particularly the last two games for me. The Everton one, where you know you're going to face an aerial barrage from Everton, we know that. And yet still, it looked as if we weren't ready for that or we weren't up for that. I'm not quite sure how to. But I know Everton are really good at set pieces and they exploit them brilliantly. And, you know, you've got to give them their due for that. But we just didn't look up for that particular fight. And then similar on the weekend, concede two headed goals to a West Ham side who will target that because they've seen weaknesses there, but we need to be better. I mean, Jared Bowen wins a header,
and that was really interesting because I think that was really good play by West Ham, to be honest with you. Because
I see you both coming Claritin tributes to
yeah,
it's like I'm making sandwich here.
There was good.
I'm trying to work out whether
that was the bread thing. And you can credit West Ham and Everton in the same way because fair play, they worked the set piece really well. It's good delivery, it's a good execution ahead of etc. But my word, like, you've got to be better defensively at some point.
Again, I think West Ham have been brilliant there for the simple fact that Liverpool know West Ham will be good at set pieces. Liverpool know David Moyes has made his money on set pieces for how many years now in the Prem, and they took it quick on us, and we were ready for that. And that's West Ham knowing what we will be, how scared we will have been after the Everton game of conceding from a set piece and then quick corner, and then Van Dijk's still trying to organise everyone in the middle. You've got to have leadership, you've got to have people who are going to take control, who are going to organise things quickly.
And you know, I've said this, and it's, I know I'm sure this won't be a popular point with the comments, but whatever, like, we've badly missed Jordan Henderson this last month. Like, and I don't mean necessarily specifically Jordan Henderson, but at the same time, I do actually mean exactly Jordan Henderson. And the thing is, I have no doubt that we've upgraded from a physical and technical perspective. There's no doubt, you know, we've got more goals from midfield than we ever had. You know, so in bringing in Gavin Birch, Szoboszlai, promoting Jones to being more regular in the team, more time from Harvey Elliott, and obviously Alexis McAllister is a stunning footballer. Great. But I've just, this last few weeks where you've looked at games where you just need someone to just deliver the right balance between bollocking people and actually going and physically showing people what to do on the pitch. We've really lacked that. And look, Jordan Henderson doesn't make Cody Gakpo, Darwin Nunes, Mohamed Salah better, you know, more clinical finishing in the last month. And that is the counterbalance to all this, because if all of them had just taken their chances, we just wouldn't be sat here having any of these negative conversations. But I've, at times in football matches, that lack of someone who's been there and done it in the midfield has actually we changed too much too soon, and I don't think that, and again, it wasn't planned.
Well, both Arsenal and City have exactly that. I mean, Arsenal had this, played like us this time last year. You know, they fell apart, but this, they've learned from it. And City, obviously, they've been and done it loads of times now, so we're the new kids on the block, and we haven't quite got that measure of it.
Our experience, and look, this is where my criticism with Mohamed Salah over the last couple of weeks is really sort of strong, and we'll pick up on him a little bit later on, but he's the main man. It's on him to go and grab it and do whatever it takes to make it sort of happen. But everyone else, our influential players, are not in the right areas of the pitch, so they're actually almost exposing us in trying to do it, you know. So Andy Robertson gets the goal, brilliant, but why is Andy Robertson getting the goal? That's a fine, you know, it's great to have that, to have someone who can pull that out, but your left back arriving in effectively a centre forward or 10 position to scuff a goal into the bottom corner is a great break glass sort of thing, but it speaks to where we're at. He's trying to make something happen. Trent's moving into midfield, now that's systemic, but he's obviously trying to get forward and make things happen. Virgil carried it for a little spell, including obviously the goal in the League Cup final. Alisson Becker's in goal, you know, beyond saving stuff, which he's been doing, there's not much more he can do in those environments. What we needed, and McAllister I think has done spectacularly, but you needed Dominic Szoboszlai to be 25, it's just stupid to say, but you know what I mean, you need him to be the, well, we needed him to be the man.
His country, and he's dragged them to the Euros. So, where's that drive and energy? You know, this last he's 3 or 4.
The whole thing hasn't felt like a title challenge to me. That's the weird thing about this.
I agree with that. No coach welcomings, weird atmosphere at Anfield, too much pressure, and the only thing I can think about it leads me back to Klopp and Elton to leave.
Yeah, no, I agree. The Henderson thing's really interesting, just to pick up on that as well, because I noticed a lot of people started to speculate and say similar things around the Atalanta game, and it's funny because that clip of him barking orders that everyone is from from Atalanta away a few years ago, and it's just a weird sort of crossover, because you're right, I think at times we have missed that leadership, and just keeping people honest in around the pitch, it goes a long way sometimes. And just as of late, whereby we needed big players to step up to the plate, that's why we've been left short. And just, there's been times whereby it just feels like we're going through the motions a little bit, and you know, we mentioned defensive mistakes along the way, they've obviously been there, they've been evident, and not been anywhere near clinical enough in front of goals, no two ways about it. But at times it has felt like someone needs to get a grip of this game and sort of take responsibility for what's going on here, and unfortunately no one's been able to do so.
Yeah, it is, it's just an odd one, isn't it? And that's sometimes the thing with like Virgil and Trent, brilliant, I'd be, you know, the contracts are going to, conversations are going to come up soon, move heaven and earth to keep them at the football club as far as I'm concerned, but they are too good at football at times to, when a situation's not going their way, they're not that, you know, like we always talk about this about Jordan Henderson, was he wasn't as good as football at football as some of the lads we had, so we had to make up for it by being more to everyone else on the pitch. And look, again, he doesn't play for Liverpool, we've got ourselves to this situation, we got ourselves to the dance, and we've fallen apart at the end. So would we have gotten here if we had Henderson instead of Endo as an example? I've got no idea. Possibly not. You know, there's that. I think that's a realistic argument to make as
I
well.
I think there's a point about Virgil that he doesn't inspire intensity, does he? For me, everything is slow, and you know, all this stuff about passing back and forward between the centre backs and all that, that's fine for most of the game, but there are times when you have to throw that out the window and just
Atalanta
go play centre forward, Virgil. You know, show a bit of determination.
Atalanta away was crying out for someone, because they had the composure bit, the don't rush, don't waste the ball, keep our heads, our time will come, which is classic best Klopp Liverpool, but it also lacked that someone else just to go, right, fuck it, come on, right, now we're just going to sprint for a few minutes and go and drag it forward. And whether that's like someone like Alexis McAllister next year, he might be that character for us, because he'll feel like it's his team all of a sudden. But I think there's a weird handover thing going at the moment, where you've got the lads who've been there and done it, and it's their football team effectively, and then you've got the young lads or the new lads coming in who all fit in really well, it's a great camaraderie between them, but there is like there's a bit too much of a pecking order, whereas that Klopp team kind of came up together, and I know we added bits along the way, but it didn't feel like there were any superstars in it, and there does feel like there's a little imbalance in everything that we do. And funny, because Andy Robertson is almost the antithesis of this, and we need a bit more Robertson in what we do really. But again, he's a 30-odd-year-old left back, you know, playing for us in an awkward fit in the system that we're trying to do with an inverted fullback and what have you. So it's difficult. I want to talk some positives from the game, if anyone wants to indulge me on this.
Short section, yeah.
I thought Gravenberch played well.
Yeah.
I thought Elliot played well. I thought Luis Diaz is currently, I think, our best player, I think, in the way he's all-round playing. Mm-hmm. I said this to you the other day. If he just scored a few more goals, we would have a new Luis Suarez, I think. And I think that's evidenced by his song's the only one that seems to be catching fire in the way ends and stuff at the minute. Because he wants it. He
does, but there's a problem with that as well, because he's not good enough to be our best player.
Yeah.
Like, and he has been our best player, and by a mile, because of everything that he puts into the game, the heart, he's got that willingness to drive you on to results and everything else. But our best player should be scoring goals. Mm. Our best player should be making assists and all this type of stuff. And unfortunately, he is a great foil for when Mo Salah's scoring 30 goals a season and your centre forward scoring 25.
Yeah.
But if he's the one and the other two are crap, that's not good enough.
He's not good enough to be our best player,
that's what I'm saying.
Playing better almost to compensate for them not playing very well.
Yeah.
But he doesn't score the
goals.
He's not
the output guy, is he?
Make the real difference. Yeah. Which is, you know, you just have to applaud him for the way he's playing, because anyone else, their head could go down. They could think, why am I bothered?
The derby especially, I thought he was outstanding.
His skill set is just phenomenal.
Let's just quick on Gravenberch as well. I thought that was probably his best put together performance of the, you know, certainly since he's come back from injury, and he's not played too much, but he was doing things that I want him to do. He was linking up, he wasn't shy, he was constantly trying to get the ball, he was moving into dangerous positions. He's another one who's guilty of maybe not quite, you know, taking his opportunities. Is it him who does the back heel flick thing.
Just wide of the post.
Cool, man. Like, don't do that. Just score. You know, he has that really good strike, which, again, he hits it superbly, miles over the bar from central. But, you know, he was doing a lot of the really functionally sort of fine things.
And he was much more involved. We sat here last week and I was talking to you and Chloe and you, Paul, about how, like, listen, I didn't think he was as good as Elliot at the time because he wasn't as involved. He had 10, 12 more passes completed this week than he did the previous week. You know, he completed a lot more dribbles. I think he completed maybe 7 of 8 dribbles or something ridiculous like that this week.
We began to see why we bought him for the first time.
Yeah.
But it's taken all season.
He's got the lot, hasn't he? I would say on that. I think he possesses every attribute you'd want in a centre midfielder. So I think there's very, very high ceiling there. I think what it's been difficult for him, it's been a bit of a learning experience for him a lot this season. Obviously, he comes in on deadline day quite this year. He also gets no pre-season whatsoever for Liverpool. So he has been playing catch up a little bit as well. And maybe it has taken too long. The injury thrown into there probably hasn't helped either. But there's no doubt about it. Like, he's a real talent there. And for what, 30 million? That was a proper bargain. I think in the fullness of time, it will look like that as well, to be honest.
Yeah,
I
guess. Or he'll fall by the wayside in a system that doesn't suit him.
Do you think that is a possibility?
I don't know whether, if we play a double pivot, is he good enough to be a 10 for us?
Oh, I think he'd have to be one of the other ones, yeah, I do. But regardless, I mean, I don't think he's going to be feeling worse about his chances with a Dutch coach. The opposite, to be honest with you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And similarly, actually, for Cody Gakpo, I want to talk next. He's another one. In this last few weeks, I think he's really, really stepped up. Cody Gakpo's issue is that, in a very Roberto Firmino-like way, he doesn't eat, sleep, drink, whatever, goals. Scoring goals is not his bag in the way that it is Darwin Nunez's or Jota's or Salah's.
The thing about him, though, he'll score goals if he has a chance. Yeah. Darwin Nunez won't. That's the difference.
Yeah.
He's more clinical.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you put him through on goal, the chances are Gakpo will score. You put Darwin Nunez through on goal, you have no idea whether he's
going to score or not. Yeah. But that's my overriding take on Cody Gakpo. Again, if I was able to enjoy his performance knowing that the game didn't hinge on it because I knew it didn't ultimately. Yeah. So that helped going back and seeing how he performed for us. He was fast, he was direct, he was driving with the ball, he was linking play, he was getting into all the right situations. But there's one in the second half where the ball gets squared to him along the 6-yard box and he takes a touch, and by the time he gets a shot off, the block tackle comes in and a lethal striker knows you don't get a touch in the box. Mm. I just get me shot away. And again, as much as we laugh at the Darwin Nunez thing, he doesn't dally on shots, and sometimes that means he does all kinds of mad shots, but he really wants to score goals, Darwin, and Jota really wants to score goals. So every touch they have around the 18-yard box is geared up towards getting a shot away. And Gakpo isn't wired that way for us. But I did see in the way he played, I know your thoughts on him, Dan, is that that was what we saw from him last season. Mm-hmm. You know, it needs to still be a little bit more nine-ish at times, get in the box a little bit more. But I thought his all-round play was really encouraging.
Yeah, once again, I think, as you mentioned at the top there, I think he's having a really good sort of tail end of the season, to be honest with you. And what was a bit of a strange season for him in many ways, we've said a lot, he's sort of a victim of his versatility, and then it got to a point whereby, can we keep saying that, or is he just not playing particularly well? But I think particularly recently, he's been outstanding at a time whereby some of the more instinctive finishes, if you want to put it that way, have fallen by the wayside a little bit, and their forms fell off a cliff just at the wrong time. Cody Gakpo's really stepped up. And yeah, I think another one, similar to Gravenberch in a way, who has a lot of what you'd want in your attacking player. I think he's got loads into his skill set. He can really bring a lot to the table. I agree with your point about him not being a natural goal scorer, I would say, but I think he was more of that when we bought him. But it feels like we've sort of taught him so much. We've given him so many instructions. He's had to learn a different way of playing altogether. There's a period back end of last season, obviously after he signed, whereby we were saying, Firmino 2.0, where it is, no problem, everything's going to be fine, because he has loads of that. But if he gets back that combination, that hybrid of what he was doing at PSV and what he did for the Dutch national team, combined with what he now has learned at Liverpool, I think we've got a real player on our hands again. So yeah, I think he definitely needs to learn getting into the box more and being more of that killer in front of goal, because he's got the ability to do so. He can fit that finish against Manchester United, always brings it. That was a wonderful finish.
The second one,
the first one was something, you know what I mean? But that second one, that's a proper finisher. So he has got that. It just feels like he's lost his way a little bit this season.
He's unfortunate, isn't he? Because all his best work, everyone knows, comes from the left. That's what he does for the national side. That's what he's done in his career. We tried to change him, then haven't tried to change him into a Bobby Firmino. We've then switched him back to the left. Then we switch him into midfield.
Not been helped.
I mean, he hasn't got a position. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Give him a position and let's see how he does.
This comes back to what I said at the start, when I think mistakes have been made. Like, you know, Klopp himself said, you know, too much. I tried to turn him into a centre midfielder, yada, yada, yada. Plays two outstanding games on the left-hand side, plays through the nine again. It's like, come on, like, what are we doing here? Because playing Cody Gakpo through the nine is completely different to playing with Darwin Nunes through the nine. That changes the centre forward. Yeah. It changes the two wide forwards. It changes the midfield and the passes that they've got available. And we're doing this on a weekly basis. We're changing, chopping and... It was a 34th game of the season. We're still chopping and changing the formation, basically, because of the personnel. That's not good enough.
Well, that goes
we should know what our best side is by now. We should be playing it.
That was the first time that 11 had ever played together.
Yeah. But that was the problem. We said this toward the back end of last season. We didn't really care because it was just about getting wins and getting momentum toward the end of the season. But the second this season kicked off, I was really worried for Gakpo, either Gakpo or Nunes, because it had all the hallmarks of when Arsenal bought Lacazette and Aubameyang or had them both at the same time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you've effectively got two guys, two centre forwards who play the role differently, but they're both the big money players. You know, you could go with one or the other, but you can't go with both. And they tried a bit of them two up top and they'd often be off the bench, they'd do something. And that's cool when what Liverpool have gone with is this squad system approach, which is fine, but we've left with a business end of the season where you're not really sure what your best 11 is, and then, you know, again, you've got two different systems and you can't go horses for courses because you've just got to put Gakpo in and hope that works for you. And I did worry a bit for that because, if you're going to play a number nine, which is what Darwin Nunes is, then you've got to play to his strengths. But Gakpo doesn't want to, it's not natural to him. He doesn't want to play there. He needs, if he's going to be Bobby Firmino, what did Bobby Firmino have? He had 220 goal a season wingers either side of him, and we don't have that anymore because Salah, particularly this last month, 2 goals in 9 games, I think. You know, I think are they both penalties as well, perhaps?
One of them
in
is
the league, and then Diaz, we've already talked about, is not clinical on the other side, so it flowed quite nicely against West Ham. But what you need is then Luis Diaz bursting in, and there's two chances he has when we're 2-1 up, and he's got to score at least one of them to make that whole enterprise sort of work. So yeah, I feel a bit sorry for Cody, but if we're digging for positives, I thought he was good. Joseph Clarkson super chatting just on Gravenberch. Gravenberch played well on Saturday, should play versus Everton for me, along with a few others that did well at Fulham. Made too many changes versus Everton. It's funny, isn't it? And that's where we're at. You know, this is the knock-on effect of what you've said there, Chris, is I'm not against us mixing the side up or playing twice a week. That's how you manage that. When we're back in the Champions League next season, that's what's going to happen because you've got two tough games a week. But it was a bit mad because Elliot came back into the side and Gravenberch came back into the side and they were both really good. And whereas in midweek, Jones and Szoboszlai and Salah and Nunes all came in and they were all crap. So like, we not even talked about Elliot, but there's another example of a lad who he's in good form. Just play the lads who are in form.
He is, and this is the thing that he's had all season long. He's not had enough games where he can play the lads who are in form, because when they get in form, they get injured and they're out of the limelight again, aren't they? And you know, I think you think back to how the defences worked this season. Obviously, Trent started the season really well, starting with the inversion and all that type of stuff. Andy Robertson was question marks, probably didn't have the best start of the season, gets the injury. Joe Gomez comes in, for me, one of Liverpool's best players of the season. Hasn't really put a foot wrong wherever you've asked him to play, whether it be right back or left back. We started to see that sort of left sided centre half thing really work with Joe Gomez, but we had the flying fullback in Conor Bradley. Then Conor Bradley goes out and Trent's in. Does it really work? Gomez was inverting, now Trent has to invert. Endo goes out for a period for the Asian Cup, so McAllister's flitting between the 6 and the 8 again in the last couple of weeks. He's flitted between the 6 and the 8. You've got Darwin Nunes, who's in poor form at the moment, but when he was in good form, Salah wasn't there. As Salah coming back in impacted Darwin Nunes, because everything was geared towards Nunes being the number 9 while he wasn't there and while he was injured, and that was the best he's played all season long. Now there's this sort of back to the pecking order thing. Darwin Nunes is there, worried about Mo Salah, maybe passing to Mo Salah a bit too much rather than taking those chances. Diaz has been an ever presence, of course, and the midfield with Gravenberch and Elliott and Jones and Szoboszlai, they've all had decent form at times. But again,
but even
when
that,
you're relying on moments.
Even that Nunez-Salah thing was working earlier in the season. That, you know, the interplay between the two of them was improving all the time. Mm. It's almost non-existent now.
Yeah. They're not playing well either.
There's no cohesion in the sides. Mm. And week by week with the changes, there's no cohesion. And a part of the changes is causing a lack of cohesion as well.
Well, we've said it various times during the show already, like some of the best Liverpool sides during Klopp's era, without getting too sentimental about it all now. But you can almost name our 11 week in, week out, like off the top of a hat, couldn't you? It was the front three constantly, then it was that engine room midfield, whatever you wanted to call it, however sort of down you wanted to play it, it worked. And it was Fabinho, Wijnaldum, Henderson at times, obviously occasionally be Milner in there, a little bit of Cage every now and then, but more or less you could name it at times, certainly recently. And some of it's been injury enforced, of course, but at times you've not been able to pick, because the Everton one was sort of a case in point of all of this, because I think a lot of people would have said on paper that might have been our best 11, but on form, it was miles off it. And I know it's a couple of changes, particularly in four, certainly in the forward line with Jota picking up another problem, which is something within itself, and Gakpo being absent for obvious reasons with his other half. But midfield, they changed the midfield wholly in the space of 3 or 4 days, which again, you know, squad rotation, game management, stuff like that, I get. But you've just played your best game for 2-3 weeks away at Fulham and put in a proper performance, second half especially, and now you've changed everything again and gone to Everton. It does feel a bit muddled thinking to me.
The thing that got me on all of this was, so this, the substitutes are lined up from, I think, 73 minutes. That's when you see, it'll be before that, but that's the first evidence of that on the telly, is that they're all coming up and it looks like Liverpool are going to make a substitution. And the ball doesn't go out of play until they score.
Yeah.
So at that point, and I know we've got pre-programmed substitution, this is one of my concerns about this thing about, I'll never know, but I'll speculate because it's interesting to speculate. I think Klopp has made more effort to listen to the sports scientists in the last 2 months or whatever of the season. And I think some of that came with a bit of rumours of discontent around Trent getting injured when he came back and Salah being injured when he came back from AFCON. But I cannot for the life of me figure out why Trent Alexander-Arnold does not stay on the pitch when the game goes 2-2. And that's a pre-programmed substitution. Mm. They've decided that, and nothing has happened that's going to change that. And I can agree.
Not even a goal.
Yeah. The game state's changed. All of a sudden, you're drawing, and this is your last chance saloon. I mean, we take a centre-half off in 5 minutes later or 6 minutes later or whatever to go for it. What the fuck are we not keeping Trent on the pitch for? Like,
they did the same against Everton, didn't they?
Yeah.
Trent off, and everyone was saying, what are they doing that for? Again, because that's what they decided before the game.
Yeah. That was more of a lost cause, is all I'd say.
Because
you don't want to risk a re-injury or problem for Trent in a game that you're not likely to win anyway, but West Ham at 2-2.
No, the point I was making was just that it was pre-programmed.
Yeah, of course. I'm saying that exactly. It is pre-programmed, but the point, what I'm saying is, and I wonder where that's the difference of that's when you're in a, when you, you're in a leadership position, and when, you know, when you've got, you talk this, I think this is one of the things that Klopp's talking about, is that if your edge goes, you blink in the face of hard decisions. And the hard decision for me there was, unless it comes out that Trent's injured and he's not going to play at the weekend, or he's carrying something, in which case it's absolutely fine. And I'm sure, and I agree that we're managing his fitness, and we're thinking, and maybe this is a little bit of like, is a player care? Great. You know, he's thinking, well, this isn't my player anymore. So actually I've got to make sure Trent gets fit to the end of the season, then he can go and have his strong Euros, and the new guy can take him on because he's going to be a pivotal part of this team moving forward. And I'm kind of cool with that, if that's how it's gone. But there is a part of me that goes, I've got a fucking league title to win here. You know, just push him. Tell him to go out and do it. I'm sorry, mate. I know we're trying to be careful with you, but if we don't get 3 points here, that's it. That's it done. Mm. You may as well have the fucking next 3 games off anyway, because you're not going to be needed. Because
it's a long cry from Shankly giving them a bigger boot if they've got a sore foot.
Well, Trent would have done it, no questions asked, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
I'd like to think so. I would imagine so. I think it might have been the Everton game, or certainly the game recently, where he did come off, because I think he's played 90 since he got back. Yeah. He almost looked like, what, me? He'd have said, no, we need to try and win this game of footy. So I've got no doubt in my mind that Trent would have jumped at the opportunity to stay on that footy pitch.
And that's fine. Again, we've managed, and the way Klopp has managed actually is always been not for this necessarily all for this game and not necessarily all for this season. He manages for years and years ahead, and that's how we conduct our transfer business and everything. It's all been done from a position of, don't worry, it's not all on this game, everything's cool, everyone relax.
It was kind of all on this game.
It was 100% all on this game. I mean, look, it would have been, there's every chance those two teams go and win every game now. It doesn't matter. It's academic. But it is now. It definitely is now. I mean, I know I've seen people in the comments going, mathematically, all right, sound fine, whatever, fucking don't do it to yourself. But yeah, that was a chance to have it be, just keep it going for, keep the conversation going for another week, just keep the good vibes going for one more week. Give us something, just a little glimmer of hope. And it's not a slight on Joe Gomez at all, but just why are you just keep trying to on the pitch? It's mad. I don't care if it's pre-programmed, unprogram it. You know what you do? You go, sorry,
control,
Joe.
Alt, delete.
Sorry, Joe. Sit down a second, mate. We'll figure something out. And I honestly thought, because I'd not seen the Salah kickoffs, and I only saw a couple of some of the reactions, and I didn't even get the reactions because I had no phone signal. I presumed that he told Salah to sit down or something. You know, I thought he's going to tell Salah to fuck off here, and that's what's going to cause the problem. He had enough time to have an argument with Mo Salah, but not just tell Joe Gomez just put your tracky top back on a second, mate. We're going to see five more minutes
of
Trent.
Who's bringing him on for? You know, as you say, 5 minutes later, he took Kwanzaa off and brought, you know, he could have done that there, couldn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an odd one for me, that. It was, you know, and that's one point. Let's not get too myopic on the individual points of the game, because there's a couple of ones that I do actually want to focus on. We talked about it already, but Liverpool go 2-1 up and it's jammy. We get a slice of luck, but that's exactly the slice of luck that you deserve when you work really hard.
It's a goal we've conceded 1,000 times.
Yeah, fucking hell, about time.
One on Wednesday night.
Yeah, about time we got one of them. You don't lose that game. You can't lose that game from 2-1 in that situation. And that goes back to the naivety. And I was tracking it, because again, I was watching for the subs thing. And it's loads of stuff happens in that spell of time. We have three clear cut opportunities to put that 3-1 before they actually score the goal. Diaz has two and McAllister has a header as well in that time. And Andy Robertson just runs down a blind alley down the left wing for no discernible reason whatsoever. Loses possession, and that's not the necessarily doesn't then go, they don't then break and then they score, but then you've got Alisson comes out and flaps one, they've then get the ball back in, he saves one from Emerson, which is a really good save, and then they just cross the ball.
Alisson should have just caught it, and yeah. It's, you know, butterfly effect in it. It's such an easy catch for a goalkeeper like Alisson.
It builds up the momentum.
It was just
for them.
5 minutes, wasn't it, of intensity, and that we collapsed and conceded the goal.
Isn't it?
Five minutes.
Yeah.
You know, we're totally in charge of the game, but without, as I said earlier on, really pushing and getting a third goal. You know, not really having the intensity to want to kill the game off.
Yeah.
And then 5 minutes of intensity from them, and next.
It was a decent second half up until that point, from us before, considering the lack of tempo in the first half, and it did feel sort of an extension of what we've seen recently for Liverpool, just going through the motions a little bit. First 45, it just wasn't it. But then I thought we came out second half with loads of purpose, loads of intent, and obviously we get the two goals, albeit one of them was very fortuitous. But yeah, to be undone, as you say, by just what felt like a few moments of pressure, and it's just like, oh, here we go again. And the deflation I felt watching that was tantamount, and I imagine it'd be the same for the players as well, because you have worked and got yourself in a position of, okay, we can win this game from here to that. It's a bit like, here we go again.
And the encouraging sign from all of this, we're talking about the Diaz thing, and it look, goes both ways, but functionally that's how they're the runs you're meant to make when you've got a Cody Gakpo number 9 in there, out to in, diagonal runs in, down, bearing in on goal, cutting in on your right foot, sticking in the bottom corner is the obvious answer there. So you've just seen it playing out now, and it gets in my head watching it, so it must get in literally everyone's head at this point. Like, we've been here before. We've been doing this for a month where we've been creating these excellent clear cut opportunities, and you can laugh one or two off, but after a while you're just like, this is cursed, you know what I mean, and just you start to wonder what it is. And it's just, yeah, whether it's a lack of composure or fatigue or just a lack of that level of ability, I've got no idea, but yeah, wholly frustrating. Okay, just on the Salah thing, do we know what that was now? Is that
it's still not been spoken about as necessarily what caused the commotion.
There's a lot of stuff in This Is Anfield today about how the new video footage or phone camera footage from the crowd shows Salah reluctant to knock his hand, Klopp's yeah. hand when they first went on, and then did it reluctantly, and then Klopp gave him a bit of an earful because of it, and he gave him an earful back, and that's all it was.
But I think it might have stemmed from taking too long to get ready.
That's what Carragher said, but he was ready for 3 minutes on the sideline.
I did see prior to that it was taking a while to get his top on and stuff. So maybe, and there's all schools of thought here, is Salah was fuming to be on the bench, full stop. Mm. It took too long for him to be.
It will all have come back to that.
Yeah,
we'll all have come back to that.
That'd be where the initial anger would have stemmed from, I'm almost certain of it. Yeah, and like I said, Salah, and also we concede, obviously, just he's about to come on. So Salah might be making the point that look what's happened now. You keep me on the bench until the 70 odd minute, whatever it was, and now we're level anyway. So, yeah, I think maybe a few different factors. Led
I mean,
to
it
that.
Did light a bit of a fire under him. He came on, like he was running.
He showed us he's still got his pace.
Yeah.
That's one thing.
I was like, ooh, look at that. Yeah. Salah running in behind. Get it.
It'd be better. But then I don't think the comments after the game, like a lot of people. I don't understand it.
I mean, who cared? So he has a bit of a shout match with the manager. I don't care.
Yeah, I don't. It's more when things are going wrong, what you don't want is your best player and your manager having a kick off on the touchline, because nothing says there's a wider issue here than that level of disharmony. No good, when things are going well, that shit doesn't happen, does it? You know, Steve McManaman and Bruce Grobbelaar don't scrap when Liverpool are the best team in Europe. It's when you go, this is all shit, and who's the
it's blame, the Milner one when he come off in it and he end up we
that was my stand money, yeah.
You know, that's the type of stuff that when it's going well, it works out like that.
And you laugh about it.
And you laugh about it afterwards. Oh, fucking hell. Yeah, optics, you're right, boss, sorry.
The optics of this one on great, especially when you factor in, obviously.
You've got Bobby Firmino going,
yeah, the burn. Yeah, exactly. We needed a bit of that. I think if Bobby had been there, I'm sure he would have delivered.
It's also a worry when, you know, Captain Chaos is in the middle of the two of them.
Separating them.
What's that?
Playing mediator. I mean, something's gone badly wrong. No, you're right. I think, like I say, the Salah stuff, the fact Salah's been one of the hottest topics for lots of different reasons in recent weeks, his form being the main one, of course. We know Klopp's leaving. It's just not a good look optically, is it, for me? And again, maybe it was something out of nothing in terms of the grand scheme of things, but I don't like it.
Right, no, yeah. When Salah's going, if I speak now, it'll be fire. When he's walking through the mix zone and all that type of stuff.
Well, I think that was far worse than what actually happened.
Yeah.
I think if he just said nothing at all, it would have blown over.
Because he could have just walked past and ignored them.
But he actually fueled the fire that he was talking about, not really. No. Well,
and he must have known what would have happened there.
Yeah, he's clever, man.
It's a mix zone. They just put their head down and walk past you. They don't say anything.
Yeah. I have been in mix zones where Salah could not get away quicker. Yeah. He never does interviews. Like, I've been in countless brand meetings with people over the years who've got, oh, Salah, I worked for Pro Evo for years, and Salah, by all accounts, was a big Pro Evo fan, and they were really optimistic when they first got that deal. Salah might get involved. Not a chance. Salah does nothing. Salah does the absolute bare minimum.
I don't get the impression he did anything in the mix zone this time in. He was just walking through.
But to the point, what I'm saying is, Salah just never says a word to anyone ever about anything. So you're right, actually coming out and speaking. And the worst thing about this is, because we've now seen Ornstein tweeted, and I think Paul Joyce has said something as well, that the plan is that Salah's going to stick around. We're going to sign a contract extension. If you told me this 6 months ago, I'd have been like, that's absolutely incredible news. But on the back of all this, it's a very weird situation where my immediate thought when I watched that was like, I'm backing Klopp in this, and Klopp's leaving. Do you know what I mean? I'd be taking Klopp's side on this and going, you shut up, you've not been doing the business.
Well, isn't it a bit suspicious that it's come out today how everything's wonderful at the club and Salah's staying?
The timing
after
is
all this little fuss.
Would you sell Salah this summer?
No, not a chance.
Not a chance.
Absolutely no chance. I don't think he'd even want to go. Why would he? He's at the top of his career. He still thinks he can win the Ballon d'Or and the Golden Boot and the Champions League and the Premiership. He's not going to go to Saudi Arabia and into obscurity.
Just to dig on this, though, are you not concerned with what you've seen from him since coming back from AFCON?
Yeah, I think he's got his first injury in his career, and I think it's affected him quite badly. I don't think he's reached form. But, you know, give him a break. You know, look at his career with us. He's entitled to one period of two months or 3 months where he just isn't at it.
Yeah.
You know, and give him a chance as well. He's playing with Darwin Nunez.
Can I answer in a different way?
Sure, go for it. I was going to throw a diamond in that particular muscle, but yeah.
I probably would.
Sell him.
I probably would now, yeah. And I take your point, and I agree with them actually, John, about the injury. I think it's a really pertinent point, and it's probably right as well. But I do look at his age, and I do think, if you are wanting to take money for Salah, it has to be this summer, because unless you sign him up to a new contract and you're convinced that he's going to be good for the next 4 years, it's a huge risk at £300,000 a week or whatever. So I would be weighing my options up, and I'm not dead set on selling him, by the way, but I'm thinking, if I get a bid of £150 million, that is a rebuild that I think Liverpool need in some big areas of the field, because I think
I don't think you're getting a bid that big this summer.
Well, maybe not. Even if it's 100, I might consider as well, by the way, for the same reasons. I think there is still a large rebuild. I think we've got a crux of a very, very good squad here.
You know, if he's getting sold and he has anything to do with it, he's signing for Newcastle. Or he's signing for Paris Saint-Germain. He's not going to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. No, probably. I agree with that. Yeah, you're probably right, but he might not.
My thing on this, my concern, and Paul Tompkins done some really interesting stuff on this, and he talked, I'm paraphrasing terribly, but like the sort of the rot of the aging superstar. And I said this the other week about my Messi, you know, Salah's being a bit Messi-ish for us. And what I mean by that is, nobody asks, Messi was so good and so important that you don't ask him to get back and defend, because he's just Messi. Just let him be what he wants to be and give him the ball and let him go on and go and win games of football for you. But I don't think that fits with our overall ethos. So that worries me a little bit of a touch. Paul's done a lot of work on like the real significant tail off in Salah's overall is what would be accounted as almost like the work rate metrics in a pressing side, and how they've gone in his defensive actions and all that. Now that might be systemic. They might be choosing that.
Yeah.
But that is a potential warning sign for us. But the big one for me is that, because if we, and this is speculation by the way, but if we're saying the Klopp that Salah's got a cob on because he's on the bench, but sign all the new contract you want, but he's going to be playing a lot more on the bench in that next 3 years or 4 years or whatever a contract, if that's what he does. And this is the Steven Gerrard thing, which where he struggled and where it actually didn't do Liverpool any great favours, because what does that contract look like? How much a week is that? And what does that do to your structure, your pay structure? Your best player, your highest wage earner needs to be your best player. And right now, let's give him the benefit of the doubt.
Still our top goal scorer.
He's still our top goal scorer. He is our best attacking player without a shadow of a doubt still. Yeah. Even though he's had a poor season. I think actually across the world, I don't think he's played brilliantly this season, but he's been effective, which is let's be honest, no one else has been effective, but maybe Cody Gakpo's playing well, but he's not been any more effective than Mo Salah. So that's a real trickier situation, because I think someone like Van Dijk is a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. Just give him a new deal, because he's just, you know, you still can't get better than him. Look at Thiago Silva, you know, he's only just starting to reach the end of 40. Alisson Becker, I'd be similarly inclined, really. Just box him off, he's a world-class goalkeeper. If you want to do that. Trent, no doubt, best player, one of the best players on the planet, prime age sorted. But Salah, we've just seen this is our first example of, is this like the warning sign?
Well, it might be, but then I think you've got to look back to Virgil van Dijk and to John's point, and to back John's point up. Virgil van Dijk took a long time to come back from a really big injury. Salah's come into a side that's not particularly in good form and hasn't played well himself, so give him the benefit of the doubt. I understand all of that. Mm. But I think at 32 years old, probably, is he now, Salah?
No, he's 32, I think.
So 32, start of next season, 32 years old.
There is an argument that you can do a lot with the money if you get a good offer for him.
Yeah. And that's
it. There's another argument that he's our top goal scorer. Top goal scorers are very difficult to find. You know, why get rid of one when you've got one? And you could even let him run his contract down for a year if you want.
But that's what I wouldn't be able to do. But I think the thing for me is, at 32 years old, what are you looking for? What are we expecting to get out of him? Because there is going to be a rebuild, and I think it's incredibly difficult for a manager to come in and sell Salah, by the way.
Uh-huh.
I think that's almost unheard of. He will want to go, fucking hell, this is the best player I've ever had the chance to manage. I want to run with him. So it's not going to be the manager that decides this. It's going to be people that have been at the football club who decide this. And we know that what Michael Edwards thinks of 30-plus-year-olds in the data and stuff like that. So I just think it's got to be a conversation.
I think you've got to decide whether Mo Salah is just an ordinary footballer, or whether he's in the same bracket as the Ronaldos, the Suarez's, the Ronaldos who go on playing football at the top level until their mid-30s.
Yeah.
You know, it's I think if you think there's any chance that he's that kind of a player, you keep him.
Yeah. I think he definitely could be, but for me, it's stylistically as well, because, you know, honestly, like, we've all had conversations and heard a lot about his style. It's going to be not too dissimilar to Klopp's, and obviously the counter-pressing and the turnovers and all that sort of stuff. Now, is Mohamed Salah still able of doing that? If he is, maybe he can play a long sort of glorious role in slots Liverpool. But right now, the underlying numbers aren't exactly screaming to me that he is capable of that. And although his numbers output-wise have been really good this season, there's no two ways about it. Like, I've sat here on numerous occasions down the line this campaign and said, he wasn't very good today, Salah, but he scored twice, so when we go with our lives. Yeah. Now, when that dries up, like it has done in recent weeks, then it's a completely different conversation altogether. I think if we were sat here and he had 3 years remaining on his current contract, it wouldn't even be a conversation for me. But, oh yeah, we're not selling Salah. What are you talking about? Even last summer, when the Saudi interest came right at the end of our window, we're like, no, we can't sell Mo Salah. That's mental. He's best player in the world at times, and he's absolutely incredible. He's a talisman for us. He's so, so important to what we do. However, when you fast forward to now, and we've seen it's almost culminated at the perfectly wrong time in a way, because he's playing really poorly. He's got 12 months left on his deal. There's a new manager coming in. We know Saudi money is going to be there or thereabouts for him again. So, well, like you say right at the end there, it is most definitely a conversation. And I'm more surprised by the reports today than I am, than I would have been had they have said the contrary. Had they come out and said Salah might be off, the Saudi interest again, Liverpool are weighing up their options, that would have been less of a shock to me than Salah staying.
Yeah, but that for me is just, I think, you know, you're shutting your stuff there as a football club, aren't you? You're not going to, if your plan is to sell Mo Salah, you don't say he's done.
Yeah.
You say we believe in
absolutely,
him.
Yeah.
We trust in him. We think we can get more years. We're gonna roll with Mo Salah.
The story isn't that Liverpool are offered him a new contract or whatever.
No, they have said that. Ornstein has said that.
Well, addressing the contract situation. What he said was Salah had made a statement that he wanted to stay and finish his career at Liverpool.
They're going to address the contract, which to me, I used to say, you can't let him walk away for free. Mm-hmm. That feels crazy to me.
No, you cannot.
But not too far removed from, as crazy as that is giving him a 2-3-year contract. On the same terms, by the way, because we know what the terms are.
I think my overall thing on this, because we've got to remember Michael Edwards is back in the building.
Mm-hmm.
And he has been one of the reasons reportedly why he kind of felt he'd had enough of it all was getting into too many arguments around when footballers need to be moved on and when they should be given new contracts. He will have the data on Salah inside and out. No one will know more about Mohamed Salah than Liverpool's opening house data team, so they'll have a clear view of that. And I do just wonder whether there is another little underhanded thing here where, listen, sign Salah down to a new contract, because I agree, there's no one out, you're not buying anyone out there who's going to guarantee 20 goals a season. You know, you can get good players who might do that for you, and everyone seems to think they know that they can, but you can buy somebody you think is going
to
be
we
bought
Darwin Nunes to score 30 goals.
Well, yeah, look, but like Chelsea have spent the Premier League era buying legendary centre forwards, and they've all basically flopped in the Premier League, from like Shevchenko and Vieira didn't flop, but he was never a, you know, super prolific, and all those kind of lads, and tons of them. Crespo, God knows, you know. But
Shevchenko, did you say? Yeah,
Shevchenko and Crespo, and there's tons of colours. Yeah, Torres, Kesman. You know, there's loads. They've bought loads of strikers over the years. You think, right, these are going to be the one. So anyway, so you if there's no major bidders and there's no great agitation from Salah to leave, then it makes sense to give him a new contract and keep him around, even if you might think his time's coming to an end, because it does just give you that position where, let's say the same happens this summer as happened last summer, so you're getting to like August and all of a sudden Saudi finally get their pot of money unlocks to all the PIF clubs again, and they go, right, okay, we're going to go make a big move for Salah. It means that we're in a very strong bargaining position. We're not in that thing where Salah's got his contracts running down, there's been no big offers, and it's getting closer and closer to the end of the transfer window and blah, blah, blah. All of a sudden, 150 million is 50 million bid. It's 60 million bid, it's 70 million bid. He's got a new contract. If someone comes in, Liverpool get the bargaining power back, as far as I'm concerned. So until I see the shape of what our transfer business looks like, it makes sense to keep him around and keep your options open. But I would be a little fearful of signing a 3-year contract or a 4-year contract with Salah means that he's got to be our best player for the next 4 years, because I'm worried that he won't be, because I think we've seen Mane was done and we didn't know it at the time. We spent all year, people going, oh God, Sadio, that's one of the most, Sadio Mane, lethal. Sorry, watch the Napoli game in 2018 in the Champions League where Alisson save keeps us in the Champions League, by the way, and tell me Sadio Mane was a predatory finisher. He wasn't. He just, you know, he was hot and he was on something. Yeah. He's fell off. Firmino's fell off. Wijnaldum's fell off. Everyone who's gone has fell off. Salah's never going to be better than he is now. Maybe this is the moment.
This comes back to the system and control, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Because it's the system that's probably forced those players to run out early.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. It does. Yeah, because we got the best out of them. We've absolutely ran them back. But we've said this season a lot about Salah, just to sort of how he's become the creator, Mo Salah, and he's not that running behind, that explosive, that dynamic running anymore. So it is slightly different, but I don't know. I don't know if that works.
If he had, though, but just to play devil's advocate, almost on my own point, if Darwin Núñez had been better at finishing his dinner in the last month, or any of our strikers, by the way, because I don't look, let's have a go at Darwin Núñez, it's hilarious. Like, but if Isak or Haaland or whatever had been on the receiving end of some of these passes from Salah in the last 6 weeks, Salah's numbers would look a lot healthier and we'd be a lot more encouraged around his all-round sort of play, because he's not, I mean, the last couple of games he's really been shit. Like, really been shit. He's not,
his
ever,
touch has been off.
Never gotten anywhere near the ball in the mid-side derby, so like not that game, but there's been plenty of others where he's been in and around.
Some of his passing has been excellent at times, no two ways about it, and you're right, there have been moments where we haven't finished.
We're well over time that I want to do for this point, but the reason I finished this game angry was because of Anthony Taylor.
Yes.
Anthony Taylor can fuck right off. Every time I think he has plumbed the depths of absolute fucking football incompetence, he invents new fucking things to find ways to just fuck us over.
Cover up his own mistakes.
Honestly, Chris, and people can say, yo, Jurgen Klopp and this running out of energy thing, it's fucking morons like Anthony Taylor and Tierney and all their ilk are the overwhelming contributing factor towards Klopp's head being done in with this all. Because you can train all you want, you can have the best tactics on air, the best systems, but if the people running the game are getting a lion's share of decisions wrong against your favour, then what the fuck are you meant to do? You're wasting your life.
It's not even that they're making wrong decisions, which they are. They're also inventing ways to change the game.
Dad, what the fuck is he doing? The goalkeeper, he doesn't blow for a free kick. The goalkeeper's got the ball in his hands and he throws it out because he's going to kick it. And he does one little stretch and Gakpo runs in and Anthony Taylor blows the whistle. Now,
panics.
I hate doing the fucking corruption thing, because I just think it's just, we all feel like referees are corrupt at one point or another when it's not going our way. But honestly, does that is it Italy Hungary am I thinking of, where there's a game, there's even a World Cup game where there's two teams and they know that they're basically through, so they just pass the ball
Germany
around
and France, maybe Germany,
but there's examples across the way of referees blowing whistles and stopping things happening because they can't allow it to happen. Now, I don't think that Anthony Taylor's in someone's pocket. I just think he's shit. And it's mental that he's made that mistake, and he knows, and he looks around and he knows, he's just, this mistake here has just ended Liverpool's title challenge. Jürgen Klopp's on the touchline. The cameras are all on him, and there's no world in which he doesn't say to Areola, just do us a favour and go down and we'll get you some treatment here, and I can pretend.
He was telling him to go down.
Yeah, he was.
Go down, I'm calling the staff, go down.
Horseshit. Utter horseshit. And the worst thing about this is that Ali McCoy's is not wrong, but in commentary he's going, just stick the ball in the back of the net and take risk the
it's
yellow
too
card.
Late. It's too late once the whistle's done.
But the whistle,
it's irrelevant.
The whistle blows and Gakpo's just when the referee blows the whistle, it's a dangerous example, sorry. But I think about, the only thing that came into my mind is that there's authority figures. When they authority figures enact their authority, we're actually meant to listen and do as they're told. But when the authority figures are incompetent, that's mad, because you are programmed to listen. So Cody Gakpo is programmed. Because he plays the whistle. He's programmed to stop when a whistle blows.
The law was broken for him to blow the whistle. The ball was in play. Nothing happened. Yeah. So what did he blow the whistle for?
It was apparently end of advantage.
Yeah. He's claiming he played advantage.
He plays advantage. He does. We've got this video of him with his arm out playing advantage. And when he sees Cody Gakpo's about to kick the ball in the net, he blows the whistle for end of advantage, which is bullshit because, you know, the goalkeeper was fine to throw the ball in front of him. If the goalkeeper's injured and wants to go down, let him throw it out of play.
Yeah.
Or call the referee over and say, can you blow the whistle, mate? He doesn't. He plays it like he does for kicking the ball up the field. So it's absolute crock of shit. It's made up. It's complete bullshit. But anyone having a go at Cody Gakpo is in the wrong here because the whistle's blown. So whether he kicks the ball in the back of the net or he doesn't kick the ball in the back of the net, the whistle's gone.
Yeah. Just on the topic of Anthony Taylor being terrible at his job, which is absolutely spot on, that tackle on McAllister in the first half, didn't even book him.
Yeah.
So what I'll never understand is they spend 30, 40 seconds looking at a VAR, and he's probably hearing all this saying, tell you what, it's not far from being a red. In his mind, he was thinking, not far from being a red. I haven't even booked him. So he must think, how shit must I be that I've given the free kick, seen it all unfold, and yet still haven't brandished yellow card? It's mental. Absolutely mental.
Ridiculous.
He's a terrible The thing is, you come away thinking, if Liverpool had done that, we would have had the player sent off.
100%.
And that's what the fans go away with. They go away believing now in all the conspiracy and the corruption stuff because it happens all the time.
Yeah. And again, it's been proven, again, Paul Tonkin's thing, referees just get more decisions wrong when it comes to us because there's this perceived bias towards us, so they try to go back the other way. It's still wrong
that they have their mates in the VAR station. They should be totally separate.
Well, nickname, you know? Just reminded me, decisions wrong, the decisions for award a goal kick when the Koufal got in front of Darwin.
Oh, my
I know it's ultimately, in the grand scheme of things, it's a corner of a goal kick. It shouldn't be so.
That's one where Darwin Nunes' reputation has preceded him.
Yeah.
He's just assumed Nunes is spooning.
Look at Alan McCoy, spends 30 seconds going, he's not missed that, has he? He's not missed that. He's like, no, he hasn't. The guy's it's great defending. How do you give that as a goal kick?
Because they're idiots, mate.
He's refereeing the Champions League semi-final, I believe. Is it Paris Saint-Germain Dortmund?
Yeah, he's terrible. They're all bad now. Even Michael Oliver's terrible. How he didn't give a penalty straight away for Tottenham, by the way, when the guy got literally booted up the balls.
You can see Michael Oliver looking straight at him.
Straight after his arm through. Honestly, just one super chat before we take a break. If Klopp can't bench Salah, how can Slot ever bench or sub him? Couldn't it end up being a mess like the Ronaldo situation at Man United? That is my biggest ultimate fear with Mohamed Salah. But yeah, ultimately, it's not my job to sort it. Right, very short break, and then we're going to have a brief chat about Arne Slot when we return. Hello everyone, we've got an amazing competition prize for you this month. It is this incredible Liverpool away shirt from 04-05 signed by none other than goal scoring hero that season, Mr. Neil Mellor. Yes, if you want to be in the draw to win this, then head to redmenplus.com, sign up as a legend tier subscriber or upgrade from a captain tier and get your name in the hat at the end of the month for this wonderful signed Liverpool shirt. See you there.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey everyone, welcome. I don't know. yes, welcome back. We're going to have a chat about Arne Slot and what a mad 7 days it's been. So a week ago we were sat here and we were having a chat just about life, the universe, everything, Merseyside Derby looming on the horizon. Then Dan's phone went ablaze and it started with the Ruben Amorim talking to West Ham that he wouldn't be in the running for the Liverpool job. And then in the space of 3 days, we went from, Dad, it's cool, you can go, mate, we'll release you from duties, but we are still alive. So it jumps then to Gary O'Neill has been interviewed for the job. And then there's not many of us in the office, I think it's on Tuesday, isn't it? And then there's a lot of like,
see you, John, thanks.
Recrimination around who it may or may not be. The Arne Slot stuff comes in quick, hard and fast. And then, yeah, as it stands, it looks like it's going to be Liverpool's next manager. It's been a wild week.
Yeah, wild. My phone hasn't stopped being ablaze ever since, if truth be told. It's been a few days. But yeah, it looks like signed, sealed, delivered. Arne Slot moments ago, actually, Fabrizio Romano tweeted a little locked in emoji above his own quote tweet about Arne Slot. And yeah, it gathered pace rapidly, really. And it's strange. It's not really a name many of us have mentioned. I've made mention of this a couple of times myself. I spoke to Mark Carey, who we know from The Athletic, the data analyst guy, and he first mentioned him to me as being sort of similarly stylistically aligned to Jurgen Klopp. And across Europe there are many who sort of tick particular boxes, but he was one of them. And Sebastian Hoeneß at Stuttgart, that was the first time Slot ever got mentioned to me about a month ago. But as you say, over the past week or so, it's really, really sort of picked up pace rapidly, and it's done. He is going to be Liverpool's next head coach, not manager. Important to state, he's going to be the head coach. And I've had many, many conversations with many different people, including the final scout yesterday, actually, about him. And listen, all the reports are good. The feedback's been really positive. He looks like, the comment there, Super Chat a moment ago, said, like, you know, how is he going to bench Mo Salah? I think he might. I think he's scared of making big decisions, is my point. I think he comes in with a reputation, maybe not so much here, but I don't think he messes about. He backs himself. And I think I like that. And one of my sort of major takeaways from this past week or so has been he fancies the job. And there's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it would have been easy to shy away from Jurgen Klopp, you know, going, I don't want to fill those boots. I'd rather be the guy to follow the guy.
Yeah.
I'd rather wait and see a couple more fail. And but
that's
he backs
what
himself.
We've been crying out for. And that's the big thing. I don't know the full ins and outs of the Ruben Amorim. We'll never truly know where he was in the pecking order, you know, on the short list or whatever. I think it's quite clear Zabi was number one. And when that doesn't happen, there's a clutch of others who are going to be in the running for it. But reading between the lines on the Amorim stuff was, it feels like there's maybe a chance they've gone, are you interested in the Liverpool job? And he's gone, yeah, all right. And they've gone, okay. And he's gone, well, I want this much to do it. And Liverpool have gone, well, no, that's not what we're not going to be paying you that to do it. That's not on the table. I think enthusiasm to do the job matters. And I just, whether if that's my reading of this thing, of like, it feels a little bit, because like, as Amorim, did he want him enough married with, has he done enough to want
accounts, I think it's come out, hasn't it, that Liverpool weren't as advanced as that, and they hadn't offered him 10 million net and he didn't want 10 million net and all this type of stuff. But I guess it's got to a point, I'm like you, I feel like it's got to a point where it's like, yeah, we're offering you fucking the best job in the world here, and you haven't really tried to bite our hands off for it. You've been a bit cool on it and all that type of stuff. And we were probably like, oh, maybe Amorim was there and Slot was here. And then all of a sudden it was like, well, actually, we've met you now and we're not feeling it. And so we're going to pursue Slot. And whereas, and the feeling when they've got in the room with Slot is, this guy wants to manage Liverpool Football Club. And all of a sudden it's gone from maybe Amorim there and Slot there to there. Like that, and Slot's the man now, and all that type of stuff.
The rumours we were hearing about Amorim as well was like, he's holding out maybe for the Chelsea job, and then these West Ham rumours, things come out, and it just feels like, again, this is just pure speculation, but you've got two guys there, let's say they're both in the running, and they're both neck and neck. One of them's playing games and saying, well, West Ham, maybe, or, you know, I'm just going to check this out. And the other one's putting public statements out saying, I want to be Liverpool manager. And for whatever we might think, and we won't know.
Pre-match as well, by the way.
Yeah, it was.
That's got to stand up for something pre-match. I mean, no one's ever done that in the history of managers. Players don't even do that, you know what I mean? And he's come out, woof, I want to be Liverpool manager.
Let's have
some of that.
And then
the more you read into it, I think naturally as a fan, don't you? You want to look for the positives in the club's decisions. Yeah.
We do anyway.
Oh, I do, yeah, and you do, and we all do. And then we look for, well, what does this mean? And there's an excitement that I'm getting from the slot thing that I'm not getting from the football right now.
Yeah.
And it's filling a big old vacuum for me, to be honest with you, because now I'm like, I do believe that in my heart of hearts, Liverpool need a change. I do believe that Klopp's the best thing that's ever happened while I've been a man to Liverpool Football Club. But I also believe that it could be better. I do believe that we could win more trophies under the next guy, because we've got a nucleus. He's built this club, Jürgen. He's put the foundations down, and now we need new ideas to drive us further. Mm-hmm. Because that happens in life and in business and in friendships and everything else you see here. It's not always the guy who puts it down that takes it as far as it can possibly go. And that's what I'm getting from this now.
I don't look, we've been banging the Bob Paisley drum a bit too hard, I think, over the last 6 months, and understandably so. But you know, but that's a good example of that sort of thing, isn't it? I was talking about a video about like manager, and think how Jürgen Klopp is just the perfect fit, and I think he's the best fitting Liverpool manager since Bill Shankly. And I had a lot of people saying, well, don't be disrespectful to Bob Paisley. And he's like, I'm not. It's just that Bob Paisley wasn't the orator. He wasn't a talker. He didn't project this. He just got about doing his business. And there's a reason why when people talk, people do impressions of Bill Shankly. And, you know, everyone's got it worked around. And people do have a bit of Paisley, but they're all like a bit like,
they're not jokey. Nice.
Yeah, they're a bit twee. Mm. Whereas Bill Shankly, oh, son, that's Liverpool's. Like, you know, everyone does this like really like powerful impression of Bill Shankly. He made this indelible mark on the football club in the city, but he never won the European Cup. But he set the foundations for what Bob Paisley was entering for. And that's, I don't like that is that because that's like assuming that Arne Slot's going to come in and take, and in reality, it's, the odds are where footy goes, it probably won't. It's probably going to be worse because that's just how footy works. But your point is right that when you're not the richest club and you haven't got everything going your way, footy will eat you up, chew you up and spit you out. And it drains out. It takes more out of you to do it. Pep Guardiola looks nowhere near as aged as every other manager who's gone up against him in the time, because he's just got the time and the space and the relaxation that comes with having all the things going in your favour. Whereas Klopp is starting to look like a guy who's been through the ringer. Mm. So actually having someone who comes in and who is just a bit more up for it will make a huge difference.
Well, he's definitely, you know, if Klopp's running out of energy, then Arne Slot is definitely energised for the challenge, isn't he? And as you said there, his recent quote speaks to that as well, because he looks bang up for it to me, and that's something in itself. And just on the Amorim stuff, I think the system that he wanted to employ was probably part of the rationale not going for him as well. I don't think the upheaval of sort of changing the formation, having gone through a whole summer rebuild last year and getting in a whole sort of whole new midfield essentially to go away from that a little bit, I think that made loads of sense. Whereas Arne Slot plays similarly, and a bit more continuity there from what we're doing now to what he's going to bring as well. And I guess the data-driven approach is always going to potentially throw up a name that we're all a little bit like, okay, where's that come from sort of thing? And that's where we are. And funnily, I had a conversation with somebody from Opta this morning about Arne Slot, and he mentioned to me, and it's an interesting little wrinkle in all this, and I hadn't even considered it, to be honest with you, how Mitchell Hughes, when he's at Bournemouth, signed Sinisterra, the winger from Feyenoord, and Marco Senesi from Feyenoord as well. So he's been watching a lot of Feyenoord whilst Arne Slot's been a manager, and it just so happens that now Richard Hughes is appointed as our director of football director, whatever you want to call it. All of a sudden we've got the final manager, so he's clearly know what he's all about and he's watched him a lot, and it doesn't shock me majorly that we've fallen upon him, because again, a lot of the underlying numbers, and it's interesting actually, I think in the end of EC this season, they're actually outperforming what they did in the year they won it. It's just that PSV have been astronomical. So by and large, he's been consistently a very good coach and he's got teams to a certain level. He hasn't really had that dip, so it does make a lot of sense if it isn't the glamorous appointment we all wanted.
What's the Hazard Alkmaar story? Because that's the one that I totally overlooked.
The league had it not been for COVID, and the Eredivisie got completely stopped. point blank. They were joint top with Ajax. I think there's like 8 or 9 games to go at the time. So ultimately, who knows? But if they'd have won it with Alkmaar, that'd have been, you know, astronomical. That, not Leicester, but similar, I guess.
And that's, that was the thing that I'd overlooked in my initial research of him when I was talking about this, because some conversation we've had, Chris, but one of the points I've been banging the drum of is, like, what your criteria for the manager that you're looking for. And mine ultimately was a manager that's broken an established traditional, you know, division that's won by a
stranglehold.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Broken a stranglehold on a division. Klopp did it with Dortmund. Rafa did it with Valencia. And they're the bar, you know, managers on the up. And I was a little concerned that they weren't out there. But obviously they are. There will be. A lot. That's why Alonso was very much up there. Amorim fits that bill. The only problem with it is that we just, there's a disrespect towards the Eredivisie, which I don't think is totally misplaced. It's obviously not one of the elite leagues in European football. But, you know, we had this chat, Chris, and it was the Ange Postecoglou argument of the pressure that exists within winning the league is totally irrelevant and irrespective of how good the overall quality of that league is, because you still got 18 or you still got 19 or 17 other teams or whatever to compete against. Winning the division is still a tough thing to do. You still got to guide a team through that. You've got to guide the expectations of a fan base. And if you're going up against a team that's elite and super rich, or two, as often the case, you know, with PSV and being in the mix with Ajax, that experience actually is relevant.
Yeah, it is relevant. Of course, it is. You can only play in the division that you're in. You can judge his time getting to the Conference League final and getting beaten by Jose Mourinho's Roma, if you want to judge his European experience. But when it comes to it, Feyenoord isn't the go-to place for players when they're going to Holland. And also, you've got to consider that Feyenoord won't be able to pick up the best players in the world, because they go to England and they go to La Liga and they go to Bayern Munich and all the Ajax and all these types of things. Well, actually, they probably don't go to Ajax, do they?
But if they're coming to the Dutch league, they're not going to Ajax.
Yeah, exactly what I said.
Also, he sold a lot of his best players along the way.
Yeah, and he's got this thing where he wants to develop youth. He can spot a bargain. He can clearly work within a management structure, a committee, if you will. And that's what Liverpool are moving towards. We're taking it right back to that point about the head coach. I said probably 3-4 weeks ago that it wouldn't surprise me if this was the reset. You know, I said that Klopp had too much control and that Liverpool will be moving to a continental style thing. And it's great to see that Liverpool have done this, because there is too much for a manager to do now. You know, there really is. You've got to beat Pep Guardiola. You've got to be as good a coach as Pep Guardiola, and you've got to have players as good as Pep Guardiola. You can't be worrying about the outside thing. You've just got to be able to do what you do on the football field, and hopefully that's what Arne Slot will be able to do.
Yeah, I'm feeling okay about that. I saw they sensationalised. I don't know if it was the Echo. It was certainly an online newspaper, but this whole manager head coach thing, and the way it was framed was a bit like, oh, the breaking with Liverpool tradition, which immediately makes you go, what are you doing breaking our tradition? And then everyone else will be like a glowing report of, well, loads of managers are doing this, and it's the way it's set up. And Liverpool have got, the Klopp has had, I don't want to say too much control, because he's delivered success, so what is too much, I guess, but it's, we've been edging towards it. Rodgers had wanted nothing to do with it. FSG have wanted this model the whole time. I mean, it was meant to be, Louis van Gaal was meant to be the director of football with Martinez or Rodgers underneath. Rodgers then dug his heels in. They went back and they went, okay, forget it, we'll stick with you. And he basically blew it in his first transfer window with the trust. And then Liverpool spent that time like clawing that sort of control back. Klopp's been a very collaborative manager, certainly for the first stage, but there's been a conversation of maybe him and Linders have had maybe too much, you know, sway in areas where they wouldn't have had it previously. So I think it's fine. If you're going to get Michael Edwards in, let Michael Edwards, he's the one, and I'm trying to remind myself at this point, we got Michael Edwards back in so that he could have it done his way. He's choosing this. This is not John Henry going, ah, fuck it, I fancy it, try this. They've got the guy in with all the experience, and this is how he wants Liverpool to be run. Yeah. So
that's been my overriding take on it recently, because I remember whenever it was, a matter of weeks ago, a couple of months ago probably now, when Michael Edwards was appointed back as a part of FSG, not necessarily directly involved in Liverpool, but back in the building, back in the room anyway, and everyone was just overjoyed. Michael Edwards, you know, best in class, gold standard, the brains behind the operation, happy days, Michael Edwards, everything's going to be fine, Klopp's going, that ship, but Michael Edwards is back. And then when Michael Edwards, seemingly for all intents and purposes, chooses on the slot, everyone goes, who the fuck's that guy?
Yeah,
so you can't have it both ways. And if we lord Michael Edwards for being a brilliant football man and he chooses or his decision is that Arne Slot's the guy, you've kind of got to take him at his word.
Yeah, and that was one of the things I said at the time, him coming in when Alonso was still on the running, was like, I said about not wanting to be go too all in on any managerial candidate. It's because ultimately you're just setting yourself up for disappointment, because Michael Edwards is going to pick who he wants, or, you know, things will move on that he won't have a choice, and then he'll pick who he wants from there. You can do your own heading with this stuff. It's an example I always use, but I remember Aubrey, our good friend, former red man, getting really cross because Liverpool hadn't moved for Jan Klaas Huntelaar one summer. Like, Liverpool were never interested in Huntelaar, but he was available, and he said, I'm going to be dead pissed off if we don't go out and buy him. I was like, well, you're going to be dead pissed off then, because like, there's no
interest.
Yeah, Liverpool are not interested in signing Huntelaar. Maybe they should be, but that's irrelevant. The point is they're not, so don't you're making yourself angry by choosing to focus on certain things. But yeah, look, I think everyone's, I agree with this degree of like, I think the worst we should feel is a little indifference. I don't see the need for the anger and a lot of the angst around it, because it's a bit like, I don't know, there's a lot of people saying a lot of horrible shit about the guy who's going to be the Liverpool manager, and you're going to have to live with that. You're going to have to live with this guy managing your football club for a spell of time now, and in the knowledge that you've made a prick of yourself by saying horrible things about him, and either that's going to lead to some embarrassing moments where people might go, didn't you say this? Mm. Or people being forced to live and die on this hill now until he's not Liverpool manager anymore, because you laid your stall out because you thought, oh, we've got a board manager like Man United did from the Dutch league, which is just fucking stupid. Mm. It's absolutely stupid. That's the thing that's bothered me about all of this.
It's win-win when you're pessimistic about it though, isn't it? It's win-win. It always is.
You'll always be proven right, because nothing lasts forever in football. And you always get things wrong, and you've always got an opportunity to do, oh, that player who I said shit, just misplaced that pass, didn't he? Yeah, everyone misplaces passes. Best players in the world misplaced passes. And that's the thing we've lost, but also that's the beauty of Edwards, is that it's his choice. He should be the one who, he's done his due diligence on this. So if he's saying it's all right, then that's enough. It's just about enough for me to go, okay, because I'm not, what do you want me to have?
This isn't a rush decision either. Let's not pretend it is.
No.
This has been well thought out, and it was probably a couple of weeks ago where we first got there. You might be surprised about who we're actually linked with.
And that, great decision, wasn't it? Absolutely.
So it might feel like it came around pretty quickly. It didn't. They were waiting for the Dutch league to finish, the cup final and everything else, and that was that.
Yeah.
They knew they wanted, I'm sure of that.
I wonder if there's any links to the pickup in form of Cody Gakpo.
Gravenberch as well.
And Gravenberch in the last few weeks, where they just had a little call up and gone, is it good? How's Liverpool? Is it good? What's the weather like? It's lovely.
It's really nice. It's still winter in May, but it's really nice.
It definitely stopped raining in October, like it should have done. We had a comment here, super chat here from Saul. Says, true Klopp is similar to Shankly and respected more than most LFC managers forever. What hurts is he deserved more. Went to 3 Champions League finals, 3 contender Premier League seasons, and won 2 out of a possible 6 big trophies.
Lots of numbers there, but you missed the 115.
And that will be part and parcel of all of this, and it won't ever give us those things back. But my contention on all of this stuff is, and it will always be boiled down to, forever fans trying to banter Jurgen Klopp will forever do, and I'll tell you this now, just let's get this out of the way, they'll go 1 Premier League, 1 Champions League, and that's what they'll tell you, instead of saying we won 8 trophies or 8 pieces of silverware in 8.5 years. Like, that means that I don't even know if that counts the Community Shield. Let's say it does, and it probably does. And no one's saying that you don't open top bus the Community Shield, but it is a game of football you go to, and when you win, you have a big celebrate, and everyone has a big dance and a sing, and Costa Simicas holds it like an actual shield, and you laugh, and it's a joyous moment and an experience that you went and did. And that actually weirdly goes for those Champions League finals that we lost. And I'll never, ever forget the experience of walking around the stadium in Kiev, like just going, I'm at a Champions League final. What the hell? Like, you know, like, it happens every year. It's the biggest game of football in football. And not only am I at one, but I'm at one supporting my football team. This is absolutely
you know, absolutely mental. That would be that I've lived that. That's lived experience. So it isn't, and there exists a point where maybe that all the City stuff will come out in the wash, and we might find that after he should have had more. And I had part of me now that it's all done, and I know he's not going to win any more trophies. I kind of want that even more now. It's never going to bring him back. It's never going to mean we had more silverware to lift. I'm never going to have seen Jürgen Klopp with my own eyes lifting up a Premier League title, and that's mortifying. But yeah, you know, as far as what we've done and what we were in the 8.5 years before that, Jesus Christ, you know what I mean? It would have been lovely if it was more, but it was lovely.
Yeah, it was amazing. The whole fucking time was unbelievable, wasn't it? From where we were as a football club when he started to where we are now. If you'd have told me at the beginning of 9.5 years that we're going to win all this, yes, please. And I'm going to enjoy the ride while I do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, we're going to wrap up there. We're going to do more on the Bias Football Pod. So Liverpool have secured Champions League football for next season, which is a big thing. Minimum season objectives met. We'll have a chat around that. We're going to talk about what remains of the title race, the relegation fight, and a few other bits and pieces as well. If you want to get a half price of Redmen Plus for an entire year, you can use the code SLOT. There you go. Not race anymore because we're not in a title race.
Oh, yeah.
But we have got a new manager covered who looks frighteningly like Steve Hall. You can scan the QR code or just head to redmenplus.com, which is a yearly captain subscription, and use the code SLOT to get it for half price. Fill your boots. And it's such a fascinating summer coming up, so you're going to get all of that. And of course, now if you time it, it's going to bring it all the way back around to Arne Slot's title challenge next year as well. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us for the podcast. We're back with another one next week. Ta-da.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.